My name's Kevin. It's good to have you here today. It's good to be here. There's this song. It's a really popular song. It's called I Can Only Imagine. You guys might have heard of that song. It's kind of a beautiful song. It's talking about being in God's presence and imagining what heaven might be like. And there's one verse that always sticks out to me. It goes like this. I can only imagine when all I would do is forever worship you. I can almost imagine. I can almost make myself believe that I'm excited about this. Because honestly, most times, I can't imagine. But if I try really hard, I can almost imagine it. Kind of like getting pumped up, like for an event. Like getting pumped up for a worship service that you know is going to go really, really long. Too long. That preacher, he uses 10 words when he should use 2. And really, do we need to sing another verse of that song? I can almost imagine. Like maybe 3 hours. That's getting closer to what I can imagine. But eternity? I'm still a couple years shy of eternity. Like thousands, millions, billions. Oh, wait, and when it hits a billion, the clock starts over again. That's one long church service. And I feel tired just thinking about it. I can't imagine. But it's maybe because I've got the word worship wrong. Worship. Because as soon as I say that word, as soon as it's raised in conversation, we all have a notion of what the word means, of what I'm referring to. We all have experience with that word, with worship in some form or another. Experience that means we may not all be thinking about the same thing when we use the word worship. You may have emotion attached to the word worship, or because some of us are Baptists, we may have lack of emotion attached to the word worship. And I came into this topic not really knowing where to go or what to say, because it's so familiar to us. Because there's so much I could say, and there are so many opinions. We come week after week to this thing we call worship, and we go away thinking it was good. That was good worship. Or thinking I liked the songs, or thinking I didn't like the songs. I like the hymns. We need to do more of those hymns. I don't like hymns. We need to end them right now. That's hypothetical. That's not me speaking, you understand? Or maybe I feel flat when I come to worship. I wish I had more passion. Or I feel energized when I come to worship. Full of life. I get charged. We all come with differences. How do you feel about worship? Do you realize that this is fundamentally the wrong question? It's the question we ask ourselves, did I like worship today? Did you like worship today? It's the wrong question. We come to what we call a service. Service. Now that's a funny concept. It's funny that we come for a service, we come for the service offered to us. A worship service has become a service offered to us. Because worship has become a commodity, a product, a service that we consume. You don't like the service being offered to you? There are plenty of other churches with plenty of other services that might be more to your liking. That's hypothetical too, okay? And in our society, you can decide which service is better for you. Did you like worship today? It's the wrong question. Today we continue looking at Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 to 40, where Jesus is talking to a group of churchy people, religious people leaders in the church, they were known as Pharisees. And they had all sorts of ideas about how things should be, how we should do this thing that we call worship, how we relate to God, and fundamentally, what God is like. And they were threatened by Jesus. You know how ideas come to mind for us when we say the word worship? It was like that for them. They had ideas that they were sticking to. And if you asked them what it meant to love God, they would say, keep the rules. Keep them. Keep it squeaky clean. There's this thing called the Shema that good Jews recited twice daily. And the Shema is kind of a nickname for a command found in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 4 to 9. It goes like this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, and when you walk along the road, and when you lie down, and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. This thing, this Shema, they knew it inside out. And you know the part that says, bind them on the foreheads? They did that literally. They had these little boxes, these little leather boxes are called tefillin. And they kind of look like a little miner's cap with a leather strap. And they put them on their heads, and they've got scrolls written inside for important verses of the Torah. They knew this stuff inside out. And they still wear them to this day. You can see them wearing them to this day. So you know how we have ideas about what worship is? They had ideas about what Shema was, ingrained for generations. And the Shema for this group was about being in God's favor, keeping the rules to keep God happy. But the Shema was always about grace. It was always about remembering what God had done and responding to that with joy and gratitude. So that's where we are today. Jesus is talking to this group of Jewish leaders, and they probably have these little boxes on their foreheads. And he's talking to them about why, about what they think they're experts in. So they ask him about Shema, thinking to trap him. And it's really kind of an insulting question because every Jew knew the answer. They ask him, what was the greatest law? And Jesus replies with the Shema. This is Matthew chapter 22. We're reading from verses 34 to verse 37 today. Hearing that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees, the Pharisees got together. One of them, an expert in the law, tested him with this question. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Love with everything. Love God with all you've got. No holding back. With no secret areas. What does it mean to love God with everything? And this was the key difference between Jesus and the Pharisees, because for the Pharisees, loving with everything meant keeping the rules. But for Jesus, loving with everything, the Shema, was all about responding to God's goodness and seeing life through the lens of love, of all that God has done. Love God with everything. Anyone here ever been in love? Careful. There should be a lot of hands. I'm warning you. That's good, men. Any men here currently in love? Follow my lead. Good. Yes. I just did a wedding, and the couple, they were in love. You could see it. They were weak in the knees. They were giddy. There were tears of laughter and joy and expectation. But you know what my job is when I do a wedding? You know what the vows are for? To cut through all that. to bring them down to earth and give them a big dose of reality. Hey, you guys, I know you like looking at each other with those puppy eyes right now, but what about when you don't see so well anymore? What about when you don't look so good anymore? That actually wasn't in my vows, but I'm going to try it next time. Your bodies are young and full of energy, but what about when they're old and you're tired? What does love look like then? It's always a popular talk. And for couples that are vibrating with the emotion of love, it's like trying to put the carbonation back into a bottle that you've already opened. But here's what I want them to know more than anything. Love is more than a feeling. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. Love is more than a feeling. There's a word for love in the Bible that many of us have probably heard somewhere. The word is agape. It's a word that's used for love in this passage. And it might not come across in our Bibles all the time, but there are a few Greek words that are used for love in the Bible, and in English they're usually just translated as love. Agape love is active love. It's a love of demonstration through action, through commitment. It's a love that doesn't say, hey, what do I get out of this? Hey, what's in it for me? Is it going to feel good for me? And it's the highest kind of love because it's the love that God has for us. It's selfless love. Maybe the best example we have in our scriptures is John 3:16. For God so, do you guys know? For God so what? Loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. God so agape'd the world. God so demonstrated with action. God so unselfishly loved. God so sacrificially loved. God so agape'd the world that he gave his son. Same word here. Agape. Agape the Lord your God. Agape him. And like that wedding warning, it's more than a feeling. It's more than an emotion. I grew up in a family that frequented YWAM, which explains why I am the way I am. And YWAM, for those of you who don't know, is Youth with a Mission. It's a missionary organization. And when I was 10 years old, we lived in Hawaii, which is really rough on me. And once in a while, we had what we would call a love feast. And I would say it really was an agape feast because it wasn't about us. Because they would serve us this brown, crunchy rice, water, and if we're lucky, we got soy sauce. That was our love feast. And the whole idea with the love feast was to remember refugees and people that had less than us. Because love, as in the love feast, isn't about loving the food. It's about us eating food like this because we want to prefer the other and demonstrate that we love them with action. That's agape. It was for me anyway. I don't like brown rice. Love the Lord your God. It's not about how we feel that day. It's not about what we're getting out of it. The command, the greatest command, the Shema, is to give him everything. And that's love. There's another kind of love in the Bible that's probably a lot of us like better. It's philia. It's intimate love, emotional love. And I think we prefer this one. Love the Lord your God? Most of us are operating and evaluating and responding in this mode. Philia the Lord your God. The emotional mode, the attractional mode. If we feel good about it, we can do it. But you know the thing about this greatest command, this thing we call the Shema? It's supposed to be dominated by agape because it's not about how we feel about loving, what we get out of it. And I'm not sure about you, but I can't imagine that the difference between Jesus and the Pharisees is their understanding of the word love here. I can't see them being the type saying, I just want to feel in love with you, Lord, more and more. God, I want to be giddy for you, weak in the knees. I can't see the Pharisees saying that. And they maybe needed a bit more of that. But Jesus, like they have missed, but just like they have misunderstood the idea of Shema and what it means for life, what it means for living, what it means for how we respond to God's goodness and grace and mercy, I think we've understood this thing called love, that we when we apply it to worship. One of the problems with worship today, like so many areas and things in our society, is that it becomes all about us. We go to service, and we go for what it does for us. We go for what we get out of it. But that misses. Because we don't worship to get something for us. We don't worship to fulfill our needs. We don't worship because of how it makes us feel. We worship because God is good and His grace is sufficient, and because He's reached out to us and has called us out of darkness into His marvelous and wonderful and glorious light. So we respond with our everything. And the word love is important here, because the word love doesn't mean that you come to God like a giddy young couple in love for the first time. The word love means we're in thick and thin. We're in it for the other. We're in it because we respond to the love, and what was shown to us, we worship by giving our everything. Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. Everything. That means everything. Love Him with your time. Love Him with your money. Love Him with your talents. Love Him with your gifts. Love Him, agape Him with everything. Worship isn't just about singing songs in 1 hour a week. We hope we can keep it to an hour, right? It's more than that. And with our teams, we could go longer, right? I know, I realize I got to be careful here. I could dig myself into a hole. Sorry if I'm doing that. Worship is giving our everything to God. Worship is how we live. Worship is how we act. Worship is how we treat our bodies. Worship is how we treat God's creation. Worship is service. Service is giving. Worship is giving everything. Paul said in Romans chapter 12, verse 1, "Therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship." What does it mean to worship? Love God with everything. Everything. Love God with everything. Now here's where I can get in trouble. It says I'm supposed to say this in my notes. Did you like worship today? Don't answer the question. Earlier I said that was the wrong question. It's the wrong focus. It's not about us. Loving God is not about what we get from it. And you know the right question? Is God pleased by what I'm offering Him today as I come to worship? Is God pleased? Am I loving Him with my everything? Am I agape-ing? It's kind of combining two languages there. Am I agape-ing God? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. Put it in your heart. Bind it on your forehead. Remember it. Put it there and keep it there. Can I call the team up at this point? I can only imagine. Can you imagine worshiping God forever? Worship that's about us using our gifts, our life, our energy, our passion, our everything in our walk with God? Here's the good picture about eternity. It won't be boring. It's not about sitting in pews singing for billions of years. It will be about the deepest fulfillment we can imagine. It will be about doing what we are created for. It will be about pure joy and participating with God and what He is doing by giving Him our everything. And you know what? I can imagine that. Let's respond by singing and worshiping and offering God everything.